Chapter 16 of On the Duties of the Clergy, Book the Second. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. On the Duties of the Clergy, by St. Ambrose, Book the Second, Chapter 16. Due measure must be observed in liberality, that it may not be expended on worthless persons, when it is needed by worthier ones. However, alms are not to be given in too sparing and hesitating a way. One ought rather to follow the example of the blessed Joseph, whose prudence is commended at great length. It is clear, then, that there ought to be due measure in our liberality, that our gifts may not become useless. Moderation must be observed, especially by priests, for fear that they should give away for the sake of ostentation and not for justice's sake. Never was the greed of beggars greater than it is now. They come in full vigour, they come with no reason but that they are on the tramp. They want to empty the purses of the poor, to deprive them of their means of support. Not content with a little, they ask for more. In the clothes that cover them, they seek a ground to urge their demands, and with lies about their lives, they ask for further sums of money. If anyone were to trust their tale too readily, he would quickly drain the fund which is meant to serve for the sustenance of the poor. Let there be method in our giving, so that the poor may not go away empty, nor the subsistence of the needy be done away and become the spoil of the dishonest. Let there be then such due measure that kindness may never be put aside, and true need never be left neglected. Many pretend they have debts. Let the truth be looked into. They bemoan the fact that they have been stripped of everything by robbers. In such a case, give credit only if the misfortune is apparent, or the person is well known, and then readily give help. To those rejected by the church, supplies must be granted if they are in want of food. He, then, that observes method in his giving is hard towards none, but is free towards all. We ought not only to lend our ears to hear the voices of those who plead, but also our eyes to look into their needs. Weakness calls more loudly to the good dispenser than the voice of the poor. It cannot always be that the cries of an importunate beggar will never extort more, but let us not always give way to impudence. He must be seen who does not see thee. He must be sought, for who is ashamed to be seen? He also that is in prison must come to thy thoughts. Another seized with sickness must present himself to thy mind, as he cannot reach thy ears. The more people see thy zeal in showing mercy, the more will they love thee. I know many priests who had the more they gave. For they who see a good dispenser give him something to distribute in his round of duty, sure that the act of mercy will reach the poor. If they see him giving away either in excess or too sparingly, they contemn either of these. In the one case, because he wastes the fruits of another's labours by unnecessary payments. On the other hand, because he hoards them in his money bags. As then method must be observed in liberality, so also at times it seems as though the spur must be applied. Method, then, so that the kindness one shows may be able to be shown day by day, and that we may not have to withdraw from a needful case what we have freely spent on waste. A spur, because money is better laid out in food for the poor than on a purse for the rich. We must take care lest in our money chests we shut up the welfare of the needy, and bury the life of the poor as it were in a sepulchre. Joseph could have given away all the wealth of Egypt, and have spent the royal treasures, but he would not even seem to be wasteful of what was another's. He preferred to sell the corn rather than to give it to the hungry, for if he had given it to a few, there would have been none for most. He gave good proof of that liberality whereby there was enough for all. He opened the storehouses, that all might buy their corn supply, lest if they received it for nothing, they should give up cultivating the ground. For he who has the use of what is another's often neglects his own. First of all, then, he gathered up their money, then their implements. Last of all, he acquired for the king all their rights to the ground. he did not wish to deprive all of them of their property, but to support them in it. He also imposed a general tax that they might hold their own in safety. So pleasing was this to all from whom he had taken the land, that they looked on it not as the selling of their rights, but as the recovery of their welfare. Thus they spoke, "Thou hast saved our lives, let us find grace in the sight of our Lord." For they had lost nothing of their own, but had received a new right. Nothing of what was useful to them had failed, for they had now gained it in perpetuity. O noble man, who sought not for the fleeting glory of a needless bounty, but set up as his memorial the lasting benefits of his foresight, he acted so that the people should help themselves by their payments, and should not in their time of need seek help from others, for it was surely better to give up part of their crops than to lose the whole of their rights. He fixed the impost at a fifth of their whole produce, and thus showed himself clear-sighted in making provision for the future, and liberal in the tax he laid upon them. Never after did Egypt suffer from such a famine. How splendidly he inferred the future! First, how acutely, when interpreting the royal dream, he stated the truth. This was the king's first dream. 7 heifers came up out of the river, well-favoured and fat-fleshed, and they fed at the banks of the river. And other bullocks, ill-favoured and lean-fleshed, came up out of the river after the heifers, and fed near them on the very edge of the river. And these thin and wretched bullocks seemed to devour those others which were so fat and well-favoured. And this was the second dream. 7 fat ears, full and good, came up from the ground, and after them 7 wretched ears, blasted with the wind and withered, endeavoured to take their place. And it seemed that the barren and thin ears devoured the rich and fruitful ears. This dream Joseph unfolded as follows: that the 7 heifers were 7 ears, and the 7 ears likewise were 7 ears, interpreting the times by the produce of cattle and crops. For both the calving of a heifer takes a year, and the produce of a crop fills out a whole year. And they came up out of the river just as days, years, and times pass by and flow along swiftly like the rivers. He therefore states that the 7 earlier years of a rich land will be fertile and fruitful, but the latter 7 years will be barren and unfruitful, whose barrenness will eat up the richness of the former time. Wherefore he warns them to see that supplies of corn are got together in the fruitful years, that they may help out the needs of the coming scarcity. What shall we admire first? His powers of mind, with which he descended to the very resting place of truth? Or his counsel, whereby he foresaw so great and lasting a need? Or his watchfulness or justice? By his watchfulness, when so high an office was given him, he gathered together such vast supplies, and through his justice he treated all alike. And what am I to say of his greatness of mind? For though sold by his brothers into slavery, he took no revenge for this wrong, but put an end to their want. What of his gentleness, whereby, by a pious fraud, he sought to gain the presence of his beloved brother, whom, under pretense of a well-planned theft, he declared to have stolen his property, that he might hold him as a hostage of his love? Whence it was deservedly said to him by his father, "My son Joseph is enlarged, my son is enlarged, my younger son, my beloved. My God hath helped thee and blessed thee with the blessing of heaven above and the blessing of the earth that hath all things, on account of the blessings of thy father and thy mother. It hath prevailed over the blessings of the everlasting hills and the desires of the eternal hills." And in Deuteronomy, "Thou who wast seen in the bush, that thou mayest come upon the head of Joseph upon his pate, honoured among his brethren, his glory is as the firstling of his bullocks, his horns are like the horns of unicorns, with his horn he shall push the nations even to the ends of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim and the 1,000s of Manasseh." End of chapter 16.